Hi, my name's Courtney Doctor, and I'm the Director of Women's Initiatives at the Gospel Coalition. My friends and I lovingly refer to the women we see once a year at TGCW as our camp friends, because the time we enjoy together at a conference feels just like a week at camp. And I want to encourage you to invite your camp friends, the people you want to sit beside as you listen to great teaching, worship, stay up late chatting about theology and life, and just have fun. And if you don't have camp friends to bring, come and meet some new ones. The final price increase is on May 8th. This is your last chance to save on your registration. Sign up at tgcw24.org. I really hope to see you there. That's tgcw24.org.
Welcome back to TGC Q&A, a podcast from the Gospel Coalition, where each week you'll hear conversations between members of our council and friends who provide their unique perspective on your most pressing spiritual questions. On today's episode, Paul Tripp and J.D. Greer discuss the question, what are the biggest issues the church will face in this decade? Let's listen in.
I think that the number one issue is identity. I think the further we get away from a biblical worldview, the further we get away from these wonderful categories that God has given us that help us make sense of who we are and who we are in relation to one another, who we are, gender, sex. And then what you have is you have this horrible loss of those categories and then people grabbing for categories. I think it's one of the reasons why we have all the tribalism that we have now, because being part of a tribe gives me identity. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. This is the meaning of my life. And I just think we have to do better at talking about that issue in the way that really speaks to the lostness of people. I think we tend to talk about those issues in a way that's kind of defensive and a bit judgmental, rather than realizing the loss of that is a terrifying thing. Mm-hmm. And we can deal with those issues with a combination of clarity and grace, and I think it's just very, very important. I think we're going to see that in families, younger children. I think we just exploded things that are fundamental for understanding life, and the church better be ready to deal with that.
Well, let me just ask you to follow up with that. How would you, Paul, how would you tell pastors to prepare for that? I mean, what do they do differently?
I think we got to quit assuming that people come into our churches with that in place. I think you go back 50 years, you could make that assumption.
Yeah.
People sort of knew who they were. They knew where they fit in God's economy. People just don't anymore.
Right.
And there's a way in which say you're preaching through a passage of Scripture, you have to have that in your background, that that passage may assume things that right. You can't assume of your congregation. You have to fill things in order to make this particular moment in preaching make sense because of what the people you're preaching to have brought into the room.
Yeah, I think about it like real practically, like when it comes to the question of same-sex attraction or homosexuality. I feel like I haven't been in ministry that long, but even 20 years ago when I started, it almost kind of operated on a don't ask, don't tell. Like if I don't bring it up, we can just sort of keep that as the thing, you know, in the background. Now, when we, especially if it's unchurched people or even de-churched people, that's like the first thing on their minds is because they've, you know, they have a narrative, and that narrative says that there are some people who love people and affirm them and don't judge them, and those are not the Christians, and you're a Christian, therefore this is probably how you feel about this. And I have to meet that head on because that kind of backstory of how Christians arrive at their convictions on morality, and I have to start telling a better story. So I feel like it comes up a lot now because I'm trying to set it in the right context.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I think the way I crassly say it is people come in with sort of a media view of Christianity, which tends to be pretty negative and simplistic and judgmental. And we have an opportunity to not just tell a different story, but to live a different story
right.
with people.
Yeah, and I think what you're going to see, not to rail on big churches or seeker-friendly ministries, but there is a tendency to want to kind of dumb down Christianity to practical life lessons. And I think when there's a shared set of convictions and a shared worldview, those sermon series are compelling to people because they're like, oh, this is helpful to me. But now I think it's like all the more behooves pastors to say, we've got to start with preaching the whole counsel of God to be able to say, this is the world that God created, and this is what it means to live at peace with Him and with other people. So I think it actually calls for it. I think that dichotomy between deep preaching and relevant preaching is going to, you're going to see that go away, not just in the minds of theologians, but in the minds of the seekers themselves.
Yeah, there's this fundamental superstructure of theology that people have to have. That whole grand redemptive story that's so important. And you just can't assume that people have any of those pieces in place. In fact, they probably have none of them. And the pieces in place that they have make it almost, oh, I don't know how to say it. It's like you're speaking a different language to them.
Right.
If you just jump to the practical application piece of things, and they don't have any of the foundations that would make this moment in your preaching makes sense.
Right. Yeah, actually, it reminds me of something D. Martin Lloyd-Jones used to say, that he said that, of course, they don't know words like justification, sanctification, reconciliation. We have to teach them what those words mean and show them how they're essential. They answer life's deepest questions. You know, and so I think just in the preaching, well, I desire to reach unchurched people. I desire to bring them in, but it means that I've got to give them a new vocabulary. And I'm confident, you know what, if they can learn drink names at Starbucks, I'm confident that they can learn some of these big words and fit in.
And the confidence we also have is that the gospel addresses all of those cries, all of those questions. We don't have to be afraid. There's not going to be a new question come up doesn't address.
Yeah.
And we need to have a joyful courage as we speak into this generation that has abandoned these fundamental categories.
Yeah.
Whatever that person is experiencing, it's addressed by this incredible gospel story.
Right. Well, to build off of that, Paul, I would maybe go one step farther to say, okay, in how we are trying to reach and engage the culture, I think what you just said means that there's a change in how we have to think about reaching out. It used to be that, you know, Easter services, Christmas Eve services, a series on relationships, a really good band, Disney-esque guest services, those things would bring in people who, you know, had lapsed, lapsed out of their worldview. I think of a survey I saw recently that said that 70% of British people don't anticipate going into a church in their lifetime for any reason. It's not that they're mad at the church. It's just that I don't have a reason to. And so if we're relying on the improvement of the product that is offered up in the church, you're going to be having an awesome product for people who aren't even there. And I think it kind of returns us to some of these New Testament values of the best missionary in the kingdom of God is the ordinary church member. And I think that, pastors realizing that these great sermon series they should be, we should preach them, but being able to equip and empower people to go out and become disciple-making disciples, that's the future of the Great Commission. I just reread a book by a guy named Rodney Stark, The Rise of Christianity. And one of the things he said is, back in the early first century, he said they didn't have anything that we had in terms of, book deals and influence in government. He said, and by the end of the first century, you only had about 7,500 Christians. He said, but by, the beginning of the fourth century, you've got so many Christians in the Roman Empire that Constantine has to take note. And he said, what they had that we didn't is an understanding that every Christian was responsible for the Great Commission and that every church was itself responsible to multiply. And he said that was a better strategy than the giant megaphone that's coming, out of a church, that the majority of people are going to have to be reached outside of the fellowship on the weekend.
Yeah, and the way that I think about it is the way the church needs to sit and work when it's a center culture church, we're long gone from that, versus a fringe culture church now. That's where we are. Mm-hmm. And how do we need to change the way that we move out?
Right.
Because we're now on the fringes.
Right.
and with massive misunderstanding of who we are, but we have glorious things to say to people mm-hmm. that address all of the lostness and angst inside of them.
For example, one final thing that came to mind when I saw that question is, all right, what are going to be the challenges? Is that I think churches are going to have to decide kind of who they really are in terms of identity themselves. I think because, I mean, you can see it in politics in the Western world, it's identity communities, it's, hey, we got to circle up. You know, Christians are gospel people. And that means that there's a lot of important things that have to give way to the most essential thing. And I think, you know, you're just going to find churches that are going to group together around certain political advocacy, certain political things that, again, are good, but they're just not the most essential gospel thing. And I think, you know, whether it's how we preach or who we align with or just what they hear from our pulpits, it's got to be what Paul said. The gospel is of first importance, which means there's a bunch of other important stuff, but it's not of first importance.
That's right.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of TGC Q&A. To submit a question that you would like to hear answered on this podcast, send us an email at ask@tgc.org. And remember to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening to today's episode of TGC Q&A.